Thank you, and a warm welcome to the Heathrow Half One 2019 results presentation. Very great to see all of those of you who have braved the terrific weather outside to join us in the room. Also a warm welcome to those of you who are joining us on the conference call. I'm John Holland-Kaye, the Chief Exec at Heathrow. With me are Sally Ding, our Director of Treasury and Corporate Finance. We keep giving Sally more work to do, which is great, and Javier Echave, our CFO. Today I'm going to cover the highlights of our operational performance. Javi's going to talk about the financial position, and then I'll wrap up from a strategic point of view. Given our focus on sustainability, we will no longer be printing and handing out slides, you'll be pleased to hear, but they are available on our website, or you can get access to them through the link in the invitation. If I move on to slide four, just give you a quick overview of our highlights. This is the 32nd month of consecutive growth. Passenger numbers up just under 2%, and we're delighted that in spite of the growth, we're still able to maintain very high standards of service and to be awarded the title of Best Airport in Western Europe for the fifth year running. We're very grateful to passengers for that. We're adding new domestic and international routes, and I'll come on and talk about that a little bit later. Doing everything we can, even though we are constrained, to keep connecting Britain to global markets. From a financial point of view, our adjusted EBITDA is up just under 4% to 881 million pounds. That's a good solid performance, and that's underpinned by good cost control as well as growth in passenger numbers. We are now investing for future growth, and we'll come on to talk about it a little bit later. Hopefully good news from a debt market point of view. You will see us starting to raise the level of financing that we're seeking in the market today in order to significantly increase the capital investment over the next two, three, four years as we get ready for expansion. This is now happening, and we are gearing up for that. That's reflected in the 1.4 billion pounds that we raised in the first six months of this year. A very exciting time as we transition into a significant level of growth. From a strategic point of view, we've been investing in greater resilience, particularly around the operation of the airport, protecting ourselves against drones, which are a new threat that we're all familiar with, but also continuing to improve service while delivering lower costs. I'll touch a little bit on that shortly. Carbon has been a big issue for us for many years and has really come to the fore in the last six months. We are now gearing ourselves up to deliver net zero carbon in aviation, and I'll talk about how we're going to do that shortly. Finally, a sustainable, affordable, and financeable expansion at Heathrow, and we're well-placed to do that, and we'll give you an update on how we're doing with that in a moment. If I click on to slide six, just to talk a little bit about what we're seeing around the world from a traffic point of view. Well, overall, we're seeing continued healthy growth with North America. Quite good growth starting to come in down in Africa, and a lot of this is based on some of the new routes that have been opened up and higher frequencies. Europe is pretty stable, and we've actually changed our pricing policy over the last few years to encourage airlines to be more competitive on their European routes. Our charges for European markets are now very similar to the levels you'll see at other London airports. That should help to stimulate growth. The new deal, the commercial deal that we've put in place with airlines, which holds for the next couple of years, will help them to fill some of the empty seats we have at Heathrow because we still have 20% of latent capacity on the airplanes themselves. There's a massive opportunity for growth within what we have at the moment. If you look at the passenger traffic growth at other airport hubs, you'll see that the potential is there for faster growth if only we can take advantage of it. Now, new capacity will obviously help with that. That's exactly what they have at Frankfurt and Charles de Gaulle and in Madrid, and that's allowing them to grow at much higher rates than we are able to do. There's a huge market potential there. You'll see from the kind of growth rates that Charles de Gaulle and Frankfurt are achieving, that within the next three or four years at this rate, they will overtake us as the biggest hub in Europe. That would be a great wasted opportunity if we don't seize it, and that is exactly why we're getting on and expanding Heathrow so we can maintain our position, and maintain the U.K.'s position at the heart of a global trading network. Now, a couple of other things that I want to pick out there. You'll see that cargo tonnage has dropped for the first half of this year. That's a pattern you will see happening around the world, and it's particularly a reduction in North American routes and Asia-Pacific routes. And a lot of this is related to the trade war between China and the US. And that's really starting to affect the global economy, and you get a sense of that happening here. Other markets are actually doing relatively well compared to those. And then in terms of improving our connectivity, we now have our 13th Chinese route, and Sally will forgive me if I pronounce it wrongly, but Zhengzhou, which is at the heart of the industrial center for China. That'll be a really important trading route for the UK into the future. We've also been very pleased to see some new domestic routes opening up. These are ones we've been working on for some time, particularly markets which you can't access by rail. So Newquay really starts to open up the southwest of the United Kingdom, but also Guernsey and the Isle of Man, which are important trade and commercial routes as well as holiday routes. So we're very glad to see that network improving. And if you look back over the last 5 or 6 years, we've almost doubled the number of domestic routes that we can serve. And that's a really important part of our business model because it helps to make sure that all of the UK benefits from what we do. Now, moving on to slide 7, we've really seen a good improvement in passenger service over the last 6 months. You'll see we've maintained our position in the top quartile of European airports, even while the benchmark is improving. So I'm very pleased with that. And you'll see that from a departures punctuality and the baggage performance, we are achieving the best levels that we ever have. And it's taking a lot of hard work to do this while growing our passenger numbers and also dealing with some of the external challenges we face, particularly airspace constraints over Europe. So I think the team has done a really fabulous job with this. And there are some things happening behind the scenes you may not necessarily pick out. Two of the biggest improvements in passenger service in the last 6 months have been a significant upgrade in our Wi-Fi capacity, and that's gone down very well with passengers. But most of all, for those of you who are traveling with a non-EU passport, many nationalities, including US, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, now no longer need to queue up to get through the border. You can just go straight to an e-gate. And that has been a massive improvement in passenger service at Heathrow. You can now travel internationally with an international passport and get into this country in a few minutes. It is a world-class service, and I hope you are taking advantage of that. So let me move on with slide 8 to talk about our sustainability agenda. And I've talked before about Heathrow 2.0, which is our roadmap to be a sustainable business. And it runs from being a great place to work, a great place to live, playing our part nationally, providing a thriving, sustainable economy, but then also playing our part globally on issues such as carbon. And we're making very good progress towards this. For example, we've talked previously about how we've closed our gender pay gap. That was a really good step forward. And we've started moving more of our supply chain onto London Living Wage terms and conditions. So that's a really good example of how we are taking a lead in our local communities to put more money back in. We have updated some of our noise programs and our some of our air quality programs. We recently announced our ultra-low emission zone, which will start to improve air quality around the airport, and it will also provide funds to start investing in public transport improvements. We've also made a good few steps forward with improving the public transport connectivity at Heathrow. In anticipation of new rail services coming in, we started to add bus and coach routes, so we now have a direct fast link to Guildford, and we've started to put better local bus services in for some of our local villages at the times of day that colleagues and travellers need them to get around. Now, I'll come on to carbon because that's been a real big focus recently, and we have always set out to deliver expansion in a carbon-neutral way. We can all see that the goalposts have been changing as we've all become more conscious of the need to keep global warming within 1.5 degrees rather than the 2 degrees that were set initially at the time of the Paris Convention on Climate Change. And Heathrow 2.0 is named in response to the 2-degree climate challenge. Our next version will be Heathrow 1.5 as we update this to show how we are going to deliver what is needed to keep global warming within 1.5 degrees from an aviation point of view. And this is not just about tackling what happens on the ground. It's about tackling the difficult things which are in the air. So aviation is responsible for just over 2% of global carbon emissions, but it is one of the least substitutable of all uses of carbon. So it's important that we play our part in that. What happens on the ground is only 5% of that 2%. We have a plan to decarbonize the airport, and we've talked today about how we are going to electrify all of the vehicles at the airport. We've already moved a lot of our energy sources to be sustainable, and we'll be installing a 20-megawatt solar farm at the airport by putting solar panels on our buildings over the next year or so. So that will really start to tackle some of the issues on the ground. But the big prize is what happens in the air. We need to switch as soon as possible towards sustainable fuels, and that is likely to be around biofuels and synthetic fuel, which is where you capture carbon and process it back into fuel, but using short-chain carbon rather than the long-chain carbon that comes out of the ground. And this is something where we really need the government and other international governments to really take a step forward to help us with this. So what we're calling on the government to do is to set targets for the take-up of sustainable fuels as part of aviation fuel. It can be blended into existing kerosene. So we need to have some standards set internationally for how that change will take place. That will send a strong signal to the market to start gearing up the production of sustainable fuels, and that in itself will help to bring the costs down. And that will, over time, allow us to move to a primarily or totally bio and synthetic fuel pipeline, and help us to meet our target of net zero carbon within the next 30 years. Now, that is a good step forward. We need the government to help. We've proposed that we start to use some of the air passenger duty, nearly £4 billion that's raised, to help finance some of the investment that will be needed. So that's one of the things we're calling on the government to do. But we also need to get really serious about what we do in the meantime, is investing in offsetting so that there is we're helping other sectors to transition from traditional fuels into new forms of energy. And one example that we are using, which I've talked about before, is the peatland restoration project up in the northwest, and we think that could be a good model for what could be done as serious investment in offsetting and in negative carbon projects. So we've made a good start with that, and I think as part of our role as one of the world's leading airports, we don't just want to do that ourselves. We want other parts of the aviation sector to join in. So we are campaigning globally to get other airports, other airlines to join us in this mission to decarbonize aviation. And I think we have a great advantage with the airlines we have in the UK, some of the manufacturers and oil companies, that we can make take a real lead in what will be a new economic sector. So we'll talk more about that in the future as we update and improve our plans. Now, from an expansion point of view, you'll have seen the chart that we have here on slide 10 before, and that's a good thing. That means we're bang on track for doing what we said we would do. We're currently out with our formal consultation that publishes all of the detailed planning that has been going on and the detailed analysis that sits behind our master plan, and we're asking for people's feedback on that so that we can make sure we've captured all of the best ideas. We've identified any issues that we need to sort out so that this time next year, when we go out with our final development consent order plan, we have got the very best plan that it can be before we go into the public hearings. And that puts us on track for planning consent at the end of 2021 and then opening the new runway around the end of 2026. So given where we are with the new Prime Minister, his determination to deliver Brexit by the end of October, it will be more important than ever that we get on and deliver the trading links that the UK will need to have a credible economic plan for Britain outside the EU. And I'm sure that he'll be very glad to have a privately funded £14 billion shot in the arm for the economy over the next few years. So in terms of our overview, we have really improved the physical layout of the airport. We've added a lot more detail about how we treat the roads, the motorways, how we tackle the M25, how we start to work with local communities to help give benefits for them as we expand, so that Heathrow expansion is part of a master plan for West London and the South East. So that's making really good progress. We are getting on with planning for the 10,000 apprenticeships that we'll create and the 40,000 new local jobs. We will shortly be announcing the innovation partners that we'll be working with for expansion. We've got some really good commercial ideas coming forward from them. And we'll also be announcing the shortlist for the logistics hubs, which will be the locations where we deliver off-site manufacturing up and down the country and help to reduce the impact of construction on the Heathrow Airport area. So a really fantastic plan coming together, and we've had great support up and down the country to make that happen. So we're in a good place. If I move on to our next point, we've touched a lot on sustainability and particularly carbon, some of the things we're doing around emissions. The other two big issues that are on people's minds are surface access and noise from aircraft. And what we're proposing as we expand is we already have a number of conditions that we need to meet. No more cars on the road as a result of Heathrow expansion, specific targets about fewer colleagues coming to work by car, more people using public transport. But what we're proposing to do is to wrap all that together to make an environmental envelope. And our growth and the release of new capacity will be conditional upon us meeting those requirements. And that basically means that the faster that we can reduce our environmental impact, the faster we can grow. And that gives an incentive for all of those actors at the airport to help us to deliver those targets. And in doing so, we'll be accelerating the beneficial impact on the local communities and the economy. So it's a very creative and positive way of tackling some really important environmental issues. Now, moving on to financeability. We've got to make this affordable. We've been set a challenge by the Secretary of State to deliver expansion at close to current charges. We are on track to do that. The way in which we put the master plan together is to do it in a very phased way so that we're building the new capacity we need just ahead of demand. But we've also set out our master plan all the way to 2050. That does two things. It allows us to make sure that any decisions we're making now about things we build will be safeguarding for the future, but it also means that if we know where we're headed to, we can vary the plan if demand comes quicker or slower than we were expecting. So we can speed up or slow down if we need to, and we can do that within an affordable envelope. So we've got a very good plan which allows us to do that, and by phasing it, that allows us to be much more cost-effective than we might otherwise be if we built too much capacity in one go, too much ahead of demand. And from a financeability point of view, Javi will talk about this a little bit later. There are a couple of key steps that we are working on. The first is to put together the financial side of our master plan. We'll be publishing our initial business plan towards the end of this year. That'll be the start of the regulatory process. That'll be followed up by the response from the CAA after consultation, and then a final business plan with a final settlement in 2021. And we may also discuss with the airlines whether there's a commercial alternative to that normal regulatory settlement. We're going to be engaging with the rating agencies and the financing community and making sure that we can fulfill our commitments to maintain investment-grade credit rating through this whole process. And Javi will talk a little bit later about what our financing strategy is based on. So that's a good segue for me to hand over to Javi to update you on our financial performance. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, John, and welcome, everyone. So as always with these exciting times of Heathrow, it's very exciting on the strategy side, very predictable on the financial results side. So if I move to financial highlights on slide 16, John have already alluded to higher traffic levels during our summer schedule, our start of the summer schedule, and that means that revenue is up 4% versus last year. We have seen aeronautical charges boosted by the recovery of dilution that we faced 2 years ago, and also by the reduction agreed in the commercial airline deal that we signed with the majority of airlines in the last months. It's worthwhile noting that from an accounting perspective, from 1st of January, we have adopted IFRS 16, which means that all the previous operational leases will now be classified as leases. The implication for our profit and loss account is that some operational costs have now been reclassified to below EBITDA depreciation and finance costs, which otherwise would be artificially boosting our year-on-year EBITDA growth. So to ease your like-for-like comparability, all the numbers in the presentation are presented excluding the impact of IFRS 16. So using this basis, pre-IFRS 16, adjusted EBITDA have grown in the period by 3.9% to £881 million. Post-IFRS 16, that growth would be even bigger, and adjusted EBITDA would have grown by 7% to £907 million. If we look at net debt, we continue to have a healthy headroom to leverage trigger and covenant levels across the whole capital structure. And as anticipated, debt at Heathrow Finance grew slightly faster than Heathrow SP during the first 6 months of 2019. In terms of on the asset side, our regulatory asset base grew by 1.4%, reflecting the combination of the ongoing increase in capital expenditure as well as inflation. Let's now take a closer look to some of the details, starting with revenue on slide 17. As said, revenue grew by 4% overall, driven by our two biggest sources of income, 5.2% growth in aeronautical revenue, but also 3.4% growth in retail. We cover first aeronautical revenue. Aeronautical revenue reflects a combination of both increases in volume and yield. In terms of volume, we saw solid passenger growth in the first 6 months of the year of 1.8%, and John already covered different segments and drivers. If we move to yield, we see a 3.4% increase in aeronautical revenue per passenger, as you can see in the bottom right part of the slide, driven primarily by recovery of revenue that revenue dilution that we incur in 2017. I think it's worthwhile to remind everyone that Heathrow prices different passengers and different types of aircraft at different rate, so we have to deliver a maximum average charge at global level, but we are entitled to price different passengers and different segments at different prices. And just to give you an example, today we charge up to 20 times more polluting aircraft versus greener aircraft. And precisely we do this to encourage the right economic, operational, but also sustainability behaviors. So if we look back at what happened in 2017, we under-recovered around 18 pence per passenger, and regulation allow us to include that in our 2019 tariff, including plus the adjustment of RPI minus 1.5%. That recovery of yield is equivalent of around 25% of the revenue per passenger increase that we are seeing in 2019, and in absolute terms, that represents around £7.1 million. This year, we have seen also offset, and offset coming is from two areas. First is dilution that we are seeing this year that will be recovered in 2 years' time, but also the already mentioned impact of the first phase of the commercial airline deal, through which we are providing material discounts to airlines to drive growth ahead of expansion. It's worthwhile that in 2019 we are seeing a moderate discount. That discount will materially increase over 2020 and 2021, when we will be recognizing a fixed rebate of £130 million per year, plus volume rebates on top of that. Moving into retail, we saw a strong retail performance in the first half of the year. As always, I mention always the same comment, under single till regulation is great news for consumers to see retail growing, because the more revenue we can generate, the cheaper it will become for passengers in the future. In terms of retail, key drivers for our strong retail growth included the higher proportions of passengers shopping at the airport. Our intention is to attract most of the passengers that we can to our retail proposition, but also improved catering improvements and strong performance by our VIP offering, taking advantage of all the great events that we have seen in London in the summer, especially in this occasion, the Cricket World Cup. And I just wanted to sum myself to congratulate in England for the fantastic winning. In terms of other revenue, remains online with previous years overall. Moving on to slide 18. We also had a strong cost control while investing in service and resilience. Overall, and again, moving to my favorite topic, IFRS 16 in this presentation, excluding reclassification of operating leases, operating costs increased by 4.1% to £580 million, reflecting our continuous investment in growth, but also protecting resilience and passenger services. If we were looking at these numbers post IFRS 16, operating costs will actually reduce by 0.5% to £554 million. In terms of the, some of the choices that we have invested in this period, is we have really boosted our assistance with for passengers with reduced mobility. This is something that we discussed a few months ago. We have really learned, and we are now providing a significantly better service to our critical passengers. Also, we are investing on drone defense capability. At this stage, technology, we are partnering with third parties to provide the best technological solution, and that means that we are acquiring services rather than investing in assets, hence impacting our operational costs. We have also invested further in security. Obviously, we have seen significant level of growth, and one of our key commitments to passengers is keep protecting service, even if volumes were growing. And that means investing and prioritizing investment in security. A good example for this, for example, is the new CT scanners that we will be trialing. This will mean that yourselves and any other passenger will no longer need to remove laptops and liquids from their back as they pass through security. And we are the first UK airport to use this technology, and hopefully that will become a significant improvement for service. Obviously, while we retain our focus on efficiencies in our existing operation to deliver value for money for passengers, we expect operating costs to continue to grow in the following years as expansion goes ahead and as we improve surface access links to the airport. We have mentioned several times today that expansion is being delivered as we speak. Expansion is happening, and slide 19 shows how our capital plan is starting to ramp up. If you go back a few years, our maintenance and asset renewal investment has tended to be around £600 million annually, which is also aligned with our statutory depreciation. And every time that we invest in running the airport, we obviously take the opportunity to upgrade our passenger-facing facilities. Now, for example, we are investing on hold baggage screening equipment, continue investing in technology, renewal of operational assets, as well as gradual improvement in our airfield. As you can see from the chart, expansion CapEx is increasing rapidly and over the last few years, and now it's expected to hit around £300 million in 2019. And the level of the type of investment that we are doing at this stage is primarily focusing on two areas. First of all, is to prepare our preparation to request formally planning consent and obtain planning consent by the end of 2021, but also to continue progressing all our the design of our master plan that John reflected earlier. We expect that the growth of capital investment will continue growing fast in the next few years. And as obviously, as we expand our capital plan, the regulatory asset base will also grow and our financing needs will also upscale. If we put that in context in terms of our cash flow generation, slide 20 also signals how the gradual transition of our growing capital program in terms of free cash flow. As expansion gathers pace, capital expenditure and interest payments will exceed operational cash flows from 2020. Still in 2019, we have positive free cash flow generation, and as you can see in the chart, our strong operating performance over the year generated around £907 million of cash from operations. In the year, this was sufficient to cover our cash capital plan, external net interest costs, but also dividends paid to ultimate shareholders. In terms of CapEx, our cash capital expenditure in the period, including expansion, was £365 million, the majority of which was focused on asset replacement and investments to improve passenger experience and airport resilience. And in terms of expansion, the CapEx paid in the period amounted to £105 million. We also distributed a return to our shareholders, and dividends in the period was £200 million, slightly below the same period in 2018. When you take into consideration all the outflows in the period and looking at the start and at the end of the chart, net debt increased by only £113 million to £12.5 billion. The chart on slide 21 is hopefully a chart that you are very familiar with. It hasn't changed much in the last 4 years, and actually that's part of our commitment to the investor community. Hopefully no surprises there. And what you can see is that our balance sheet remains robust with comfortable covenant headroom across all three classes in our capital structure. In terms of Class A headroom, now is just over 4%, which is slightly above normal range of 2 to 3%. And as we said in our last month's investor report, we expect Class A gearing ratio to continue falling over slightly in the course of the year to just below 66%. In terms of Class B, gearing is also forecast to reduce by a similar amount. However, when you look at the total gearing level at Heathrow Finance level, it's expected to be maintained at the current levels, providing just over 5% headroom in line with our normal headroom level. In practical terms, that means that maintaining total group gearing level at the same level and reducing slightly A and B means that we are taking advantage of Heathrow Finance attractive markets, so we are taking advantage to expand first our Heathrow Finance layer in the capital structure. Moving on to slide 22, we have made extraordinary progress on developing a robust financing platform for growth. Our debt financing strategy, you can see the three boxes in the slide, continue unchanged and is focused on providing stronger liquidity, better diversification, and longer duration. We deliver on all fronts in the first half of the year and have raised £1.4 billion in new debt globally. And our liquidity horizon now stands at May 2021. In our June investor report, we set our plans for debt raising this year of just over £2 billion. So when you take into consideration the £1.4 billion raise, plus the already incurred facilities that we will draw the second part of the year, that means that we have now completed the majority of our funding requirements for this year. However, we continue focusing on monitoring global markets, and we might access strategic markets if this represents value opportunities. Particularly, there are two areas that we are focusing most after summer. First is to continue developing our ESG framework and introducing the Task Force for Climate-Related Financial Disclosures framework in our 2019 annual accounts as part of our green financing strategy. The second key strategic area that we are looking is focusing more on a U.S. market. In the last 2 years, we have been very successful on U.S. private placements, and there's a strong appetite for investors for a potential public transaction. So we will continue monitoring that market particularly. Over the next 2 years, we will continue gradually transiting to increase financing needs. If you go back 2 years, we were raising around £1 to £1.5 billion per annum. Now we are raising £2 to £2.5 billion. And we will see our issuance level increasing to £3 to £4 billion per annum over the next few years. Obviously, we are signaling to markets where we are heading because we would like to transition in a smooth way, and we will always continue looking at our commitments. Obviously, we have certain commitments in terms of protecting existing credit ratings, and we are operating in 7 different currencies, so we will continue looking at the best opportunities to expand our financing structure. In addition, if we talk to specific transactions this year, in addition to the highly successful public transactions that we completed in Q1, such as our first euro issuance in 2 years and our third Swiss franc issuance, we have completed a number of new private placements in the second quarter. And as always, every time I meet you, it's a fantastic opportunity to thank all of you for credit community for your fantastic support. Obviously, this is a joint effort, and we are very grateful for our partnership. Wrapping up on our financial highlights on slide 23 and before moving on to strategic developments, if I were going to describe this quarter, I would say that we have delivered greater resilience, better service, and lower costs. Traffic has performed well in the first half of the year despite a weaker global economy. And we are very grateful for the work that the government has led to secure that aviation remains protected in potential traffic discontinuities on the back of Brexit. So with that, we do not expect any material impact from Brexit. We have continued our gradual reallocation in debt between the Hydro SP Group and the Hydro Finance Group, and in line with our forecast for 2019, this is creating greater covenant headroom at Hydro SP while maintaining adequate buffer at Hydro Finance, noting that the Hydro Finance covenant level has increased to 92.5% after the redemption of one bond in Hydro Finance in 2019. Looking ahead, we expect our full-year traffic and financial performance to remain broadly in line with the forecast published in our recent June investor report. So with that, I will now hand back to John to review our strategic developments. Thank you.
Thank you, Javier. You were doing so well to avoid saying the B word. And then just at the last minute, you just had to say it. I was hoping this would be one conversation that we didn't have to. Let me just wrap up by giving an update on our strategic progress. And you'll know that our vision is to give passengers the best airport service in the world. That is the glue that holds all of the 76,000 people at Heathrow together. And our model is Mojo, making Heathrow a great place to work, transforming customer service, beating the plan, and sustainable growth. And we've touched on some of the things that we have done and some of the things we will be doing, but I'll just pick out a couple of those. First of all, in terms of Mojo, thanks to all those who took part in the Midnight Marathon. I know some of them are in the room and maybe on the phone. And all those who sponsored the Midnight Marathon. Hadi was very quick to get in first to tap up the financial markets, the supply chain, the board. So he, as you would expect, is very sharp commercially to make the most of the opportunity. The big question you'll be asking is, how did the investors group in the Midnight Marathon do? Well, they did a fantastic, came in a fantastic sixth place, only 16 seconds behind the Heathrow executive team, which Javi and I were both members of, not the most successful members of, I have to say. We had a few people we drafted in to boost our performance. So I think morally the investors won that one, while Javi won the fundraising. But thank you all for your support with that. And we will be doing it again next year. It's a unique experience, and I hope you will join in. A few other things. We put in place an incentive plan at the beginning of Q6, 5 years ago, to make sure that all colleagues at the airport could benefit in the success of the business. And that really helped to bring people together. And for our frontline colleagues, we paid out just over £10 million in that. So that's a really great achievement and something which we will be continuing. And what we've shown here is the driving school safety campaign. What this is that we have a lot of vehicles moving on and around the airport. And we've started to put in better control so that people can control their speed. And that's had a significant improvement from a safety point of view on and off the airport. So if you're driving around the airport, there are now speed cameras up that we have installed, and that has made a material impact to lower speeds. And on airport, we have transponders on most of the vehicles, soon that will be all of our vehicles, so that we can make sure that vehicles are where they should be and that they're going at the right speed. So it's just one of the many measures that we're taking to keep people safe across the airport. And then coming forward, we've actually celebrated Heathrow Pride. If you travel from Terminal 2, you'll see the Pride flag flying proudly above the terminal. And you'll also see many of our colleagues championing diversity program on posters across the airport. And recently when one of our airline partners, who Royal Brunei Airlines, was caught up in some really difficult decisions they had made locally to make it punishable by death to be homosexual in that country, we moved all of our advertising around the Royal Brunei check-in to make a point about British values to people traveling through. It had no impact, I'm sure, on change in policy by that country, but I felt it was important that we stood up for what we believed in. And there are many other things we will do along similar lines. From a service point of view, we've talked about some of the things that we have carried out already. Exercise Gator, which I've listed here, is an exercise we carried out to see what would happen if we had a nuclear, chemical, or biological attack at the airport. We rehearsed that in real time with all the emergency services, and we've taken a lot of learnings from that. And that is one of a number of exercises that we will be doing to test some of the potential threats that we face working with government agencies. So that's part of our resilience planning. And we're delighted that Heathrow Express is not only terrific value for money, but also came top of the National Rail Passenger Survey. Going forward, we've talked about some of the changes we've been making in security, which will improve passenger flow, and also new hotels coming into the airport. And as we look to expand the airport, there will be significant new commercial opportunities that we can develop around that as well. In terms of Beat the Plan, we've talked about some of the actions we've been taking and some of the things we were doing going forward, including around the financial resilience. And in terms of sustainable growth, we touched on most of the things we have done. Going forward, we've got the Innovations Partners announcement. We've got some really creative ideas there, which will help to make sure that we are building the airport of the future, not just replicating the successful airport we have today. And we will be fleshing out more of our net zero carbon plan and working with other airports, airlines, and manufacturers around the world to make sure that aviation plays its part in decarbonizing the global economy. So lots and lots of things that we are working on. The one thing I haven't touched on, which I should mention, is the action the United is taking to cause disruption in aviation at the moment. You will know that this is not unique to Heathrow. It's happening in most airports with most handlers and most airlines. It's a coordinated activity between unions. And we are caught up in that in spite of all the things we are doing. We've made a very good offer to the unions. But at this stage, we haven't yet been able to reach an agreement. And we are continuing to work with them in ACAS. If there is a strike and we're preparing for that, that would start on Thursday and Friday of this week, and then there'll be a subsequent strike at the beginning of August for 2 days, and then another one over the August bank holiday. So this is targeted at the busiest days of the year, and the first strike is just after state schools have broken up. So we'll be doing our best. The Heathrow will be open. We will be doing our best to make sure that every family who is booked to travel on those days can get away on their holiday. And we're working closely with the airlines to do that. And we will have many colleagues who will come into work anyway. They don't want to go on strike. We will have third parties who will come in to help us. And all of us from our support services will be out there in our purple shirts helping out as well and supporting our frontline colleagues. So if you're traveling through the airport, do look out to give us all a wave. Some of us actually have had experience working in security. We'll be back there. And actually, it's a good example of the talent we have in our business, that people are coming into security as an entry into the airport and then moving up into other roles, into management and developing their careers. That's exactly the kind of business that we are trying to achieve. And I'm delighted that some members of the Treasury team are taking advantage of that. And some of them are here today. So with that, we will move on to any questions. And perhaps we should start with any questions on the phone lines.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please dial 01 on your telephone keypads now to enter the queue. Once your name is announced, you can ask your question. If you find it's answered before it's your turn to speak, you can dial 02 to cancel. Okay. So once again, that's 01 to ask a question, or 02 if you need to cancel. Okay, we're starting to get questions coming through. The first is from the line of Jose Manuel Molina of JB Capital. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Yeah, good afternoon. Just two questions, if I may. The first one, you mentioned this financial master plan that you will present before the end of this year. Will it have a breakdown on how you're planning to fund the expansion between debt and equity? And then the second question is on green bonds, which you mentioned when you addressed the ESG initiative. Can you give us an idea of what percentage of Heathrow's CAPEX can be funded with green bonds?
Great. Thank you, Jose Manuel. So question on will we break down debt and equity in the initial business plan, and can we say more about green bonds? Javi, you would, or Sally, you'd love to answer both of these.
Hello, good afternoon, Miguel.
So I think let me address your two questions. In terms of financing, I think one of the slides we have assessed in terms of what the steps that we see in the next few years. So first of all, with this consultation, we are really inviting views on our master plan that will allow us to, in parallel with completing discussions with the CAA in terms of regulatory framework, will put us into a situation to start a meaningful rating conversation with rating agencies at the beginning of next year. So obviously we have been very clear that with our commitment of maintaining existing credit ratings through construction and ramp up, and that obviously means that once we get in conversations with rating agencies, that will set what's the expected deleveraging that we will see. So that level of detail will not be disclosed as part of our initial business plan. The initial business plan at this stage will be focusing more on the operational side in terms of sequence of capital master plan as well as pricing to consumers. Next year will be the time to really get into further details on capital structure and the right combination between equity and debt. In terms of your second question on ESG financing, we are already working with a few banks in terms of defining what would be the key KPIs that we will use as sustainability KPIs to assess our green financing going forward. That work is well developed. So I think in the next few months, we could be ready to go live, and hopefully we will keep you posted with further updates.
Muchas gracias.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if there are any further questions on the line, please dial 01 on your telephone keypads now. And we have one further question coming through at the moment. That's from Stephanie Darf at RBC. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, Stephanie.
Good afternoon, and thanks for taking my question. I was wondering if you could please update us on the regulation negotiations with the airlines and moving to a more get-with-luck framework, as you announced earlier this year, and confirm your EBITDA guidance for the full year, please. Thank you.
So, sorry, Stephanie, can I just clarify the first part of the question? Was that around the airline commercial deal or?
Yes, so you were thinking to move from a RAP framework to a more get-with-like contract-based agreement regulation framework for Heathrow.
Yep.
If you could please give us some update on that, that would be great.
Great. Well, Javier has been instrumental in leading the negotiation, so he'll be a good person to answer that.
Hello, Stephanie. So I think you have some details on page 6 of our press release, but let me bring it to life. So obviously, our original Q6 regulatory period ended at the end of 2018. To be able to marry the timing of regulatory periods with the expansion cycle, the CAA announced a first extension of the regulatory Q6 period to 2019. Obviously, that created a two-year gap between the Q6 extended period and the timing of the DCO application. So at that point in time, we engaged in conversations with airline deal, and we found that it was a fantastic opportunity to actually encourage and create and be creative and create an alternative rebate on top of existing regulations. So first of all, let me clarify, all the protections of existing regulation remains in place. What we have agreed with airlines is a rebate that applies over and above regulation and is comprised by two elements. First of all, is a fixed rebate of £130 million per year over 2020 and 2021. And then on top of that, we have built an extremely generous, I would say, especially if airlines were listening, extremely generous volume-based rebate to encourage them to really shift to volume growth in the next few years. Obviously, that's beneficial for both airports and airlines, but also more important for consumers, because I think that put the drive collaboration between airlines and airport to really make the most of scarce traffic growth in the next few years. In 2019, the deal also includes the opportunity to bring forward some of the fee of 2020 and 2021 into 2019, which is up to £50 million. And we are already recognizing that in the first half of the year. So hopefully that's clear. In terms of payments will be paid back to airlines over 4 years following the accrual year, and additional volume based also on that triggering dates.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if there are any further questions, please dial 01 on your telephone keypads. Okay, there seems to be no further questions from the phones at this time.
Thank you. And should we just see if there are any questions in the room? We have a microphone on its way to you. Perfect.
Yeah, unless I missed it, did you kind of comment on the EBITDA guidance? I think there was a question on the phone. EBITDA guidance for the full year.
Well, I think the guidance, I think, is aligned with the one that we have just published in our June investor report.
Can you remind me?
I don't have the number here, but we can point you to the right document. So I think if there's any further question, we can just pick it up.
Great, thank you. Any other questions in the room? Yes, there's one down in the middle here.
Jack Wamontraze from NatWest. A couple of questions for me. The first one would be a great set of results. Are there any headwinds that you monitor, say, kind of one, two, or three?
Well, of course there are headwinds. We're not immune to the what's happening in the global economy, but we tend to be more cushioned than most other airports and most other businesses because of our diversification. And so, for example, in the global financial crisis, from peak to trough, I think passenger numbers only fell by a couple of percent, where in most airports it would have been double digit and recovered very quickly. I think in the very short term, we may see some impact from some of the industrial action that's happening, not necessarily just the Heathrow, but what's happening with British Airways. There may be some knock-on to that. And whether that's material or not, we'll have to wait and see. I think in the longer term, one of the things that's very much in our mind is what is going to be the impact of climate change on on global economies, on the nature of aviation. And this is one of the reasons why we think it's important aviation gets ahead of the game on this. Decarbonizing aviation is not going to be quick. But the sooner we start making serious inroads, the better it will be. And my message to some of the international businesses we deal with is that even if your government isn't waking up to the issue now, they will do at some point in the future. And the later they leave it, the more radical the changes that they might need to take. So it's better for businesses to take a lead now by taking the action that they need to take to decarbonize. But the kind of measures we've outlined, government setting targets for increased use of bio and synthetic fuels, I think that's something where we'll see European countries taking a lead and then trying to establish that as a global standard. That will help the aviation sector get ahead of the game, regardless of where individual governments might be.
Thank you. Second question on the airspace redesign project, which I think underpins part of the expansion as well. Any update on that front in terms of next steps?
Yes, and that's a really important part of the program. It runs in parallel with the changes that happen on the ground, but without the changes in the airspace, then the physical runway and buildings won't be able to fulfill their potential. We had really good feedback on the second consultation on airspace change, which took place earlier this year. As we go into the consultation on the as we put together the planning application, we will have indicative flight paths in there and proposals for how we are going to manage airspace, how we're going to manage alternation, and we're consulting on some of that at the moment. We won't be able to finalize those until we have completed the planning process. And the reason for that is that changes may be introduced as part of the planning process, which mean that we have to make modifications to the way that we manage airspace. And so that will happen in the early 2020s. But the program has been very good so far. It's the biggest consultation program I think that's ever taken place anywhere in the world around airspace change. And of course, all people really want to know is, will I have more planes flying over my head? And if so, are they going to impact me? And we won't really be able to answer that in the detail that people want until we get into get past the DCO and get into the final flight path. But we've learned a lot from the consultation we've had to help us to distribute noise more fairly and to minimize the amount of noise that we create on people on the ground. Thank you.
John, if I might come back to the previous question, we publish our investor report twice a year in June and December. So on 27th of June, we publish our latest investor report. The forecast at that time for adjusted EBITDA for the year is 1877 for the full year. And that includes £35 million potential contingency to deal with Brexit. So 1877 plays against 907 in the first half of 2019.
Thanks, Javier. Question at the back.
Paul Marney, UBS. Given the political news today, would you mind commenting on the B word, not Brexit, but Boris?
The other B word. Well, of course, we welcome the new Prime Minister, and we will work with him. I'm sure the question you're really wanting to know is, will there be a change of policy on Heathrow? I really don't think there will be. The political decision has been made. And many of the comments that were people challenging him on were made before Parliament expressed its will, which is to get on with Heathrow expansion. But there's two other good reasons why we can be confident of that. First is that any economic plan for the UK which involves trading more with other parts of the world than we have done while being part of the EU has to involve Heathrow expansion, because we're the only game in town to getting people from all across the UK to all of the growing markets of the world. And we are some way down the process already. Secondly, £14 billion is a massive investment in the UK economy at this stage, and any Prime Minister would be grateful for that huge investment. And just an example of that, we held an event last week in support of British Steel to show our support with the unions and employers for creating jobs in the steel sector in the UK as we expand the airport. And that's a very practical way in which what we are doing will help to boost the UK economy. Thank you. Any final questions in the room? Great. Well, let's close it there. Thank you for your time today. Thanks for coming out. And particularly thanks to Deutsche for hosting us today. They've been really fantastic hosts. Thank you also for all of your support. As you'll see from what Javi's been talking about in terms of the way in which we're now gearing up for growth, we are going to be very active in the financial markets over the next few years. I hope that is good news for you, and we will be looking for both your advice and support as we do so. But it's a very exciting time for all of us as we transition from a steady state business into a business that is really growing very quickly indeed. And I really want to thank you for all the good work you're doing to help us with that. Thank you very much.